fallow seasons in ministry. What are they? Why do you need one? And how to make your fallow season happen? Now, you might be thinking, what on earth is a fallow season? Some of you are going to get this very easily because you come from a farming family, farming background, okay? Jesus, a lot of his stories were about farming because his audience were farmers. So they understood that right from the get-go. So what we're actually talking about here is how to make one day off a week a reality for you. And, yeah, I'm glad you didn't start laughing, and having a real, actual vacation. Why do most kids' men leaders like, yeah, right. Because kids' ministry is incredibly involved. It has a high burnout rate. A lot of pastors tell me they do not have any days off at all, ever, which is not healthy. And as we talked about, if you were in the session last night, we talked about we deal with things as pastors that others don't. So you have a lot of secondary PTSD. You have the fact that you are pouring out emotionally and spiritually all week. And you probably don't realize it, but you are also ministering to your volunteers. You're ministering to parents and grandparents. So they are pouring out grief of things that are happening to them, and you are just there for them. You're on, so to speak. So the biggest pressback I get from leaders when we talk about you need a fallow season is they will say, well, you don't understand. You don't understand. You don't get it. It's not possible for me. You don't understand. You don't get it. I'm so busy. I have all this happening to me. What you need to understand more than anything else is that it is possible. So before you start telling me, nope, 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 I can't take a day off once a week, it's not possible. Nope, I cannot go on a vacation, not a real vacation. My poor dad, he's been the senior pastor of the Assemblies of God Church there in Adams a very long time. He's actually, this June, he will have been a lead pastor for 50 years. And he and my mother have, I guess we could call it a joke, it's become a sharp discussion for them, that every time they try to leave town for a vacation, something happens. Every single time. I think one of the last times, you know, he had an associate pastor, phenomenal guy, like 88, and they'd gotten halfway to Texas to see my mom's side of the family. And they got word that the associate pastor, he fell in the shower and died. And they were going to be doing the funeral. And my dad's like, do I turn around? And my mother's like, I will kill you. And then there will be two funerals. She's like, we have planned this vacation forever. We've just driven 14 hours. They're trying to get all the way down to Texas. So it ended up, the youth pastor did the funeral because... And of all times, and have you ever had that thought? Of all times for this to happen when I'm trying to get out on vacation. So I do understand. I do understand. So we have a higher chance of burnout doing the ministry that we do. People do not understand it unless they've done it. And some of you, if you're volunteers, you still work in kids' ministry. You're still a minister. I said this at the church where I was at. 276 volunteers. I said, we have 600 kids on a Sunday morning. We don't need one children's pastor. We need hundreds. We need you in ministry. So what they were is we'd have ones that worked in banking and they were a children's minister. We had ones that would be elementary school teachers, phenomenal children's ministers. We had ones that were hairstylists and fantastic children's ministers. I'm thinking of some of my ones that stood out. They're absolutely phenomenal through the years. One was a couple. He owned a Christian bookstore. He and his wife were never able to have kids. They were my best pre-K teachers I've ever had. And in their 60s, by the way. Phenomenal. I had a guy that actually led my son to Christ. He was 70 and a retired chemical engineer for 3M Corporation. Brilliant. and such a great children's minister. But when you are in ministry, and we all know part-time means 50 hours in kids' ministry, and full-time means 80. It never turns off. Ministry is not like a regular job. It just, your heart doesn't turn off just because you got home. But there are things that I was doing wrong. Somebody would be offended and upset with me, and it's 10:30 at night, and I'm wanting to fix it right at that moment. I was burning out. Okay, so we had 4 services on the weekend and 1 midweek. So 5 services a week that we had to be prepped for. And at a church that size, we had everything that you had to worry about. The lights, the sound we had. And I'm talking for the kids' church service. We had the program manager that was handling the stage stuff for that. The teams that were doing drama. So a lot had to go into each week for the 4 weekend services, and then midweek was Awana, and you've got all of those leaders that you're doing. I didn't get home Wednesday nights midweek till sometimes 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And 2 small kids, okay, back at that point, they were still pretty small, I think 9 and 7, right about that age. They're 22 and 20 now. My oldest just graduated with his physics degree. That is not my fault or my doing. That's all my husband's. I didn't have anything to do with that. Math is not my strong point. But Logan is still, he loves puppeteering, things like that. My daughter's 20. She's in school for electrical engineering. Again, none of my genes ended up in these children. But they are wonderful, and they love church, and they love Jesus, and they volunteer at church in a lot of different ways. Back then, those poor kids, they were there with me till late at night when we could finally get home, and then they'd be cranky on Thursday morning because we're hauling them out of bed to get them to school on time. That's just my life. And one of our services was Saturday night, and 3 on Sunday morning, back to back, boom, boom, boom. It was very, very busy, and during the week, there were so many meetings. You had the senior leadership meetings, and then you had other meetings. We joked we had meetings about the meetings. We're going to have a meeting about when we're going to be having our regular meetings. It was ridiculous. And I started noticing things in my own life, and I was not paying attention to it at all. I was just pushing forward as hard as I could. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap. Get in there. This is for Jesus. You know, you just keep going. But I was physically starting to have issues, like constant stomach pain that I was completely ignoring. Didn't know why. I thought it was nervous. I was having constant stomach pain and not sleeping very well. But, you know, you just suck it up and you deal. We had stuff almost every night of the week. And I wasn't realizing just how unhealthy that was. I wasn't understanding it. And I feel bad now because I probably helped perpetuate that for my interns that I had at the time. I had wonderful young interns, and we always used a lot of the youth group kids in there, and I was just go, 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 go. I have this story on my blog, but I was 33, and we were preparing to go on a kids' missions trip to Swaziland, Africa, and I had a team of young people going with me. And in the middle of the night, I just woke up in the worst pain of my whole entire life, just horrendous. And they took me by ambulance to the hospital, and the hospital was like, well, you probably have stomach flu, go home. Well, I found out 6 weeks later, that's not what it was. I had a bleeding ulcer that burst. I bled out. My gallbladder was in pieces all over. And because 6 weeks had gone by since then, I had, the only thing I was able to eat was rice because everything hurt. And so when I woke up in the hospital after that, so 6 weeks later, my husband, I knew it wasn't good because he's sitting next to me going, I can't raise these kids alone. I can't raise these kids alone. Oh, God, I can't raise these kids alone. And I'm like, well, something didn't go right in that surgery. And the doctor told me they thought it was cancer everywhere. It was white rice on the outside, because there was a big gaping hole. And he said, we have no explanation for how you're still alive. He said, I'm an atheist, so I figure it's some kind of evolutionary leap. Because he said, nobody loses that much blood and survives, because all the blood was out in the abdomen. And he said, you should have been dead by septic shock, and then you should have been dead by gangrene, because it's been 6 weeks. And he said, we reassembled your gallbladder, and we think we got all the pieces. That's not what you want to hear. We think we got all the pieces. But, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, how soon do I get back to work? Because those kids and those families, you know, those kids and those families. And just the week before that, I had helped with the kids' ministry baptisms, and two of the parents complained to my boss, the family life director, she looks like she died a week ago. She looks like a corpse. That's scary. She's frightening the children. So my boss is like, why aren't you, like, resting up? And none of us knew what was going on. So I went for my follow-up visit. Oh yeah. So 6 weeks after that, I went back to that surgeon. And he asked me, what did the gastroenterologist say? And I was like, what gastroenterologist? And he said, right after your surgery, and I was pretty drugged up at that time. He said, right after your surgery, I told you to go see the gastroenterologist. I was like, oh, well, I must have missed that entirely. And he said, well, we need to know what he thinks about all the rest of them. And I said, all the rest of what? He said, all the other bleeding ulcers that are about to go. Remember, this is 6 weeks after. And I'm just in shock. And he goes, you didn't go? We have to know what we're going to do with all of that. So I went to the gastroenterologist, and I was asking them after they'd done all those scopings, do I eat differently? What do I do to keep this from happening? And he said, I don't know. I've never had anybody survive before. Because I thought maybe I should start, you know, go to a support group on it. There aren't any others. So I thought to myself, I'm not sure what to do. And I was talking to my regular doctor who happened to be a Christian, and he's from Russia, so he's really funny. And he's like, I'm going to write this on the script because you don't listen. Quit your job. Quit. And I said, I love ministry to kids, and I want to minister to kids and families. And he said, you want to be with Jesus right now and abandon your children and your husband. And I said, no, that's not what I want. Quit your job. Well, I talked to my bosses at this church, and I knew we had some problems as a staff, because I knew at the time there were at least three of the pastors on the pastoral staff that I knew their wives had left them, and they had a divorce, and we were keeping it quiet. The staff had to stay silent because with four services, no one knew. They just figured the wife was going to a different service. And I knew this was happening to so many. There were 18 on the pastoral staff. Three were going through terrible divorces. And then I saw other things happening where, you know, we were there so many long hours. I saw one of the discipleship directors was getting mad at one of the youth pastors and just angrily throwing a thing of tissues at him and yelling. And it's just not healthy. Does that make sense? They've got a new pastor now, and he's awesome. But at that time, we all were pushing so hard, and I didn't realize how not biblical that was. I didn't realize what an awful example I was setting. Okay, I'm a go-getter, so this was just feeding me. But nobody had a gun to my head saying I had to. I was just going. And it's like God allowed this to get my attention. God had to tell me to wake up. So for me, it became an issue of I am going to cut this down to 40 hours a week for the most part. I'm going to cut it down, and I'm going to make my family the priority. So before you start telling me it can't be done, if I could do it in that kind of environment, so can you. So the first thing you need to know is you have a whole lot more power over your schedule than you think you do. We feel helpless. We feel like all this stuff is coming at us and we can't do anything about it but survive and endure. You have a whole lot more power over your schedule than you think you do. But here's the unfair part. That day off each week that you, yes, you should be taking, that vacation that, yes, you need to take, you're going to have to fight for. And I remember thinking, I don't have much fight left, but I had to, it dawned on me, if I don't fight for this, it's not going to happen. And a lot of kids ministry leaders I run into, this is what they'll tell me. My lead pastor doesn't care about me because he's never once told me to take a full day off. Well, what did he say when you talked to him about it? Well, I didn't, but he should just know. That can be kind of like a girl thing. If my husband doesn't know what he did, I'm not going to tell him. Your senior pastor does not automatically know how many hours you work. Like, well, he should just see that. He should see how hard I'm working. That lead pastor is over so many things. They typically are putting out fires everywhere. They know what you tell them. And if you're just waiting for somebody to go, you know what? You have worked so hard. You deserve it. You're going on that vacation, and I'm not going to let anybody bother you on that vacation. It's not going to happen. If it has for you, that's awesome. That's like seeing Bigfoot. That's wonderful. But typically, you are going to have to fight for it because nobody else is going to. You're going to have to get much stronger boundaries, and you're going to have to decide to get healthy and stay healthy. And it's very hard to do that if you are in an unhealthy environment. Okay? Our environment got a whole lot healthier, but I had to dig in my heels and say, this is what I am going to do, and this is what I'm not going to do. I think we feel like, oh, I'm not a good person. I'm not a good Christian. I'm not going to please these people. The best type of Christian you can be is be that parent that's healthy for their kids and put your marriage as a priority over that particular ministry, okay? So I'm going to give you some practical things I had to do to make this happen. I was your poster child of the worst of workaholics, for sure. I was always checking my phone and the laptop, and my husband would lean over and just close the laptop. Boop! It's 10 o'clock at night, Trish. But. I had to learn, and it was hard. This was so hard because it was against my instincts. So in agriculture, so if you have any kind of a farming background, the fallow season refers to a farmer intentionally letting the land rest for a season in order to replenish the nutrients in the soil. In ministry, a fallow season is a time for your ministry to re-up or rest and renew before another busy harvest season. What does Scripture say about taking a time to recover and replenish? Okay, how did we learn that the land needed a fallow season? It was through trial and error. You know, God said to do it in the Old Testament, but early American farmers did not listen. They just kept over-farming until there was nothing left, and what was coming up was just sparse and bad, and they had widespread hunger, and they finally learned, okay, God meant it when he said, you have to rotate these crops, you have to do different things, you have to replenish the soil, or you're not going to get the crops. It won't work. So a fallow season is a season of rest, and it's intentional, it's on purpose. We almost think that's a sin. It's a necessity. It's not a sin, and God ordered it, and there's a reason. Okay, on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work. So if God did it, he was setting the example for us, okay? We always think we got to do one better than God. You have 6 days each week to do your ordinary work, but on the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest. You shall do no work wherever you live. And usually the excuse there I hear from kidsmen leaders and other church leaders, well, that was Old Testament, doesn't count. Well, it says don't murder too, so. You know, and they say, well, the priests worked, but even the priests ended up taking some days, a day off of rest too. So let the land be renewed and lie fallow, uncultivated during every seventh year. Then let the poor among you harvest whatever grows on its own. Leave the rest for wild animals to eat. The same applies to your vineyards and olive groves. So this was about their work. This was what they did for work. He's like, you have to take a fallow season. And I'm sure back then they didn't know why. But now we know if you don't do that with the land, you're going to strip it of all of its minerals and it's not going to grow anything anyway. Jesus said to them, come away with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat. Anybody been there? Jesus said this to them. Notice the examples of Elijah, Paul, Moses, Jesus. Jesus got away with God to pray. Not because he was weak, because it's the right thing to do. He went away with God all night sometimes when he was going to be choosing disciples. And he would say, come away with me, because you don't even have time to eat. That's probably the first time I choked in my whole life really bad. I'm trying to shove a Subway sandwich down my throat while running down the hall to get to a practice for something. It's like, okay, because every one of my meals was standing up, running down the hall. Just wild. So a kidman leader's job really is harder. It's not all in your head. It is harder. It is harder. You have to recruit more volunteers than any area in the entire church, except perhaps a parking lot team. However, you cannot just put anybody in there. You can't put somebody in there without background checking them. You can't put somebody in there, even if they've been a Christian a long time, if they've got a bad temper problem in front of those kids. You can't do that. Sometimes you can't put them in there. We had one that was always bringing his cat. And there had a lot of kids in there that were allergic to cats. It was an adorable cat. Still, it is the most volunteer-intensive ministry in the church. So you have the hardest job for recruiting and training volunteers in the whole entire church. The greeter team does not need as much training as your pre-K volunteers need. The greeter ministry, if you get somebody on there that had a felony for a bar fight 10 years ago, I think, you know, there's different gradients of it, but you got to be careful too. I always check their Facebook posts to see what they're doing, because we had one we were going to hire for an admin, and every picture was her passed out in the bar. Every picture. I was like, okay, internet is forever. So this first one, kids and family ministry is tougher. I've skipped that one because often there is little to no built-in downtime. My apologies to any of our student ministries leaders in here right now. I would have to get to God every spring when the youth leaders and the associate pastors were like, oh, I'm so glad it's almost summer when we get to take a break. Thou shalt not kill. It's in there. Because for us, summer is not a break. It was not a break. Because summer, we had to figure out how we were going to do kids ministry with almost no leaders. Because I live in Wisconsin, they're all off camping. And how on earth, you know, we had VBS coming up. We'd have a back-to-school rally we got to plan for. Summer kids camps. We were planning our curriculum for the next year. It was not a break. And then we get to Christmas, right? Christmas at our church, Christmas Eve, we'd have 7 services in a row. And what did Pastor want? I want the kids choir to sing at all 7 services. Oh, and then we still have our normal four services on the weekend. And all the youth pastors were like, I might greet that day. Maybe I'll greet. I think I'm going to go home early and eat some Christmas cookies. They were all chill. They're like, I love this down time of the year. I'm ripping out my hair because, you know, you got kids running around. It's like herding cats. And you're like, get your finger out of his nose. Up there. Stop. Nope. Nope. Oh, who fell off the stage? What? You know, and you're trying to do all of this and the stress of all of that. There is not a built-in downtime. I realized that once. I was like, huh, Easter, we have kids ministry stuff. Christmas, kids ministry stuff. Back to school, summer camps. We even had a July 4th thing where we'd be in the parade. There's just no scheduled downtime in there at all. No, it requires more administrative and safety protocol than any other area of the church. Okay, we don't make the greeter team sign in and out and get their stickers. They're adults. They don't have to do that. We don't have to be as careful to have two adults per classroom with the adult classes. Yeah, right. Two in each classroom, you know, nobody alone with a child. So all these safety protocol that no other area of the whole church has. No other area is as prone to drama and emotional reactions as children's ministry. I said that last night. We would have the Easter drama, and they'd audition, and one would get the solo. So we'd have the wall posting who had what part, and we ended up calling it the wailing wall. And it wasn't the kids standing there sobbing. It was the parents. And this was every time. I would try to make myself scarce because, I can't believe you didn't choose her. And then they all sign up for meetings that week to try to, oh my goodness. So lots of drama. You're dealing with people's kids. Why did you have this snack that had gluten? Or why, you know, all these different things. That's the drama we deal with. The problem of too much sponsored childcare. I talked about this last night. This eats up your time. You are not a babysitter. We're doing ministry, the most important ministry there is, pulling kids out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. That's what we do. And it's not fair to our volunteers when you recruit them with that saying, we're going to win kids to Jesus. We're going to reach kids for Jesus. And they come on board and link arms with you to go win kids to Christ. And then we're like, well, you babysit for another event and another event and another event and another event. And for us, it was literally every night of the week. We changed that, as I talked about last night. We completely revamped that, where we were only doing childcare like two nights a year for all church events. All church events. What I did is I got a book of all the people in the church that had been background checked and fingerprinted, so were qualified to work with kids. But that binder did not have any of my regular leaders in it. And I was like, here are the ones that are background checked and fingerprinted. These are the ones you can call and use. So I was putting it on them. You have to get your own babysitters for your small group get-together, all right? The worship pastor, he's like, this is so unfair. It's like, you're going to have to get your own babysitters for your worship practices. And you can't call my best key Sunday leaders because I need them to be there and be on, and I'm trying to protect them, okay? And it changed everything. It changed everything. Because we weren't doing stuff every night of the week, and we became laser focused on winning kids to Jesus Wednesday night and Sunday morning. And my leaders were like, wow, this is important. This is important. She won't let them snatch me for this because I have something important I need to be doing. A kids service for every adult service. Okay, there is not typically a youth service for every adult service. At least at our church, there wasn't. We had the Wednesday night youth ministry services, one for junior high, one for senior high, and then sometimes they do a junior high Bible study during third service on Sunday. Those other services, our youth pastors could go to church. Our associate pastors would go to church. But when I started there, none of the children's leaders were getting to go to church. That's a problem. So what we did, and this took a lot of work. This was not easy. We realized there were not many families coming to the early service, first service, which I think was at 8:30. So what we did is we had one Sunday school class that met at 8:30, and a husband and wife team taught them. It's only 14 kids. All the rest of us went to church together, all the kids' ministry people. We would all go to church and sit with our families in the first few rows. Guys, it changed everything. It changed everything because we were saying to our leaders, we value you so much that we want you to go to church. Now, what we usually would do is a lot of them then would do second and third service. They'd stay for the third service just to help us out because they knew we valued them. We cared about them and we wanted them to go to church with their family. You say it's impossible? It sounded like it, but we managed to get it. It took a whole lot of work. I would wear a radio just in case something happened. Nothing ever did. But we were like, we're running a whole kids program here for 14 kids in first service, and we're all frying because we're never in church. We have more control than we think we do. Without a fallow season, your harvests, your winning kids to Jesus, is going to become fewer and smaller. That's just a fact. You know why? Because you are only giving of yourself, and you get to the point where you have nothing left to give. I don't know if you've ever been at this point. I had this even just a few weeks ago. It's just the way it fell. It was just the way things were. But my uncle, I help him publish books sometimes, and he was like, I want you to help me edit this book. And I was like, okay. And he's like, it's just this and just this. And I was already really stressed with a bunch of other things I had going on. It's just this. Then the children's director at my church I'm at right now, she's like, I'm getting double knee replacement. I need you to take over for a while. And I'm like, and I said, I am really busy right now. And she's like, there's nobody else. And so I'm like, okay. She's like, it's just for those few weeks. It's just for those few weeks. Then my pastor calls, the lead pastor. He's like, I'm really, really, you know, stressed out. I need you to cover the main pulpit for this 2 weeks. And I was like, I can't. I'm covering for the kids ministry leader. He messages me back. Oh, I just talked to her. You're not on for those particular Sundays, so I wrote you down. And I'm scrambling at this point, and I don't even remember what it was. One of my kids who are adults, they're like, hey, Mom, I'm going to need you to do this. It's for this paper. It's just this. And I put my head down and started crying. You've been there? And my husband was like, what? It's just a little thing. And I said, aren't they all? Just. And I said to him, I don't have any more just left in me. There's no more just. No more just left in me. And he's just like, okay, wow, okay. So being an IT guy, he used this whole editing program, edited my uncle's entire book and his front cover. It took him like an hour. And then he sends it to my uncle, and my uncle's like, this is the best one you've ever done. My husband's like, yeah. But I had to say, okay, this is where I'm trying to say no, and I know you guys have been there. You're trying to say no, and your no is not even being respected. You can do, you can do it, it's just one more. Okay, So if you don't change this, this is what's going to happen. Your harvests are going to be much more prone to blight, drama, discouragement, burnout, frustration. Okay, you will begin to lose creativity and joy. This is a huge warning sign. This is a big warning sign. What do I mean by that? That means you sit down to plan a couple months of your kids' ministry stuff, and there's nothing. It's just nothing. You can't think of anything. When you're excited about the kids' ministry that you do and it brings you joy, you're like, we can do this and we can do this. Kids' ministers have so much creativity. When there's nothing, it could be because you have nothing left to give. And we said last night, that's a big warning sign where if you have a bunch of kids come to the altar and you're praying with them and you don't care anymore, something's wrong. And probably it's because you are not doing any kind of a fallow season. So your creativity and your joy are gone. You're having trouble planning for the future. You will begin losing volunteer leaders because they will burn out. And it's not fair, but you're their covering. You're the one, you're sometimes the only voice in that whole room. I realize that, you know, we'd have 18 pastoral staff. There was only one person in the room speaking for all of those volunteers, all of those parents. So I had to be clear in my communication. And I'm not protecting them well if I let them just burn out doing all of this other stuff. I had to get a little more bold and direct for all of our sakes. You will be at a much higher risk for burnout and leaving the ministry. Pastors have a much higher rate of heart attacks and stroke and diabetes than the general public. A lot of it is the stress. And we don't go to the doctor when we should. And we just keep pushing. And we don't take days off. And it's like a medal of honor. I haven't taken a single vacation day in 15 years. That's not good. That's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And the problem is everybody following you in your ministry will start doing what you're doing. And one of the scariest things I ever heard, it was my lead pastor said to me, said to the whole team, whoever you follow, you will begin to become like. And he meant you want to become like Jesus, so remember you're following Jesus. And I realized we're all looking at this awful overworking concept, and consciously or unconsciously, we're becoming that. And then I taught my interns this is what we do, which is sad. So I had to make a major change there. How to create this fallow season? Well, the first thing you need to know is it's possible. It is possible. It's imperative. You have to. Here's the thing. God made you in charge of this body. You are in charge of that body that you have, and you're supposed to be a good steward of it. And nobody is coming in to say, are you working too much? No. That's your job. You're going to have to add in that time. So start with fortifying solid boundaries for your Sabbath day. Now, which day you pick, that's a hard part because we had a Saturday service. So it was either Monday or Friday, and both of them had big problems. So when Monday was our day off, people in second or third service would suddenly have an idea, and they'd call and ask a question, and it's on my voicemail, but I wouldn't hear it till Tuesday. But Tuesday, we had staff meetings all morning, so I'm not getting back to that person till Tuesday afternoon, and they're like, I called you Sunday morning. And so all these phone calls from the weekend are still there waiting for me on Tuesday. So that's one drawback from that. The other, for Friday, and you probably know what I'm going to say, when we made it Friday, that's when everybody would pick to go, oh, wait, what are we doing this weekend? Oh, is this the weekend we're doing the Samson thing? Well, what am I supposed to bring? You know, and you sent all of that out on Tuesday, right? You sent all that on Tuesday, so everybody's calling at that time, they were calling going, what time are we supposed to be there? Is today the potluck? I don't remember. So this is why, if you were in the last class, I was putting all those details on the Facebook page. And then I changed this with my phone, and this is huge. This is huge. I changed my cell phone number. This is going to sound really bad. You're going to have to make yourself less accessible. I know that they think because you're a pastor, they have a right to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that is not correct. Jesus withdrew from the crowds sometimes, and he got up on the mountain, and he was not giving out his cell phone number. You know? And then the crowds would rush in. He'd get out on a boat and go out in the middle of the water. You do not need to be accessible 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's not your job. Okay? So I changed my phone number, and I only gave it to my one admin. And the one admin, I trusted that she knew what was an emergency and what is not. Because somebody's mad about red dye 40, that's not an emergency. Okay? Is it gushing blood? Then call 911. But a lot of these things, this changed my life. My family life director said this, and you should write this down. Don't make their emergency your emergency. 99% of the time, it's not an emergency. They think it is, and they want to make it your problem. It could be an addiction to drama, because there are people that are seriously addicted to drama. They love drama, and if you give them that fix, they'll keep coming back to you for the next fix. So you got to shut that down and not get drawn into it, which I know can be hard. But a big part of that is limiting your accessibility. So I changed my number. I gave that to the admin, because I knew she was tough. She would never give that to anyone. She would fight to the death. They couldn't get it out of her. But she would only call me if it was an actual emergency, number one. Then I changed my voicemail on my church line saying, Pastor Tricia is not in the office on Fridays. Please call back to the main desk if you need immediate assistance. This voicemail will not be listened to until Monday morning at 9 a.m. Now, there's always people that don't listen to that. They don't even listen to what your voicemail says, but the majority did. Majority did. And then on email, I put an out-of-office reply. And I know sometimes we hate those, but it was my lifesaver. What they do is they start emailing me all these questions, and it would come back, Pastor Tricia is not in the office on Friday. This will not be read till Monday morning. For more information, go to this Facebook page for the details on the Sunday. And sometimes I'd add the details for Sunday on there. Bam. So they hit a wall there, and then they have to call the main, because our main secretary was always there on Friday. And I'd give her the details, but I didn't give her my number, only my admin. Okay? So I'm making myself less accessible. Also, I did not read the Facebook messages because I don't like that they can say seen. Because then they're like, you saw it and you wouldn't respond to me. So I wouldn't open them. I didn't open any of those at all. I didn't acknowledge any emails that came through at all. I don't acknowledge that I even read them. And then I don't have to worry about the text because they don't have my number. Okay? You are going to have to communicate effectively and often without apology. Here is an issue, okay? Time Magazine read this whole article about women apologize 15 times more per minute than men do. You have to stop apologizing for taking a day off, for taking a vacation. You have to stop apologizing, because when you're like, I'm sorry, but I really need to stay home tomorrow, that leaves an opening where they can start trying to guilt you or pull you back in. No. Ladies, I love you, but we have to start doing like some of our male brethren would do and say, hey, I'm not in tomorrow. I'm not in tomorrow. I'll be back at this date. Have a nice day. Because women are really bad about this. I'm sorry. Look, I have this migraine, and I'm sorry, I won't be in tomorrow, but if you need me, here's my number. No. No. If you need me, Jesus cares, and you can pray to him at any time, day or night. I'm not going to be in tomorrow. I'll be back at 9 a.m. on Friday. They were trained one way. They can be trained another. And yes, I know a real emergency's come up, but it's shocking how little of the time it is an actual emergency. They want access to you right this second. Don't make their emergency your emergency. Okay, planning is your friend. You probably won't be able to make this happen in 1 week. You're going to have to plan for it and fight for it. So plan your fallow season ahead of time. Do not wait until you are too burned out to go on. So the best time to get working on this is right now. Don't wait till you have a full body breakdown like I did, where it's you're either going to learn to work less or die at 33. Even if you don't see the damage, it happens on the inside of your body or your brain, your family. You need to start this now. So here's a quick suggestion, just a few ideas of things I did. So for me, my day off was Friday. I would sometimes turn my phone off. I would drive over to this place called The Green that was 45 minutes away, outdoor mall with my kids, and just go have fun. And because they knew where I lived, and I don't want to move. So I would get out of there, literally get away. Another place where I was working on staff, I'd go out to the beach where I had no signal on purpose. And then you need to do things that feed your soul. So I would find a book that I wanted to read. I love watching those shows like Forensic Files, where they catch that killer with one little hair. Yes, I like watching that kind of stuff. You know, my mind likes to have that kind of distraction. I'd go to the beach because it would calm me and it would feed me. And then on Sunday, there'd be people like, we couldn't get a hold of you. And inside, I'm like, yes. I was like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I went out to the beach. I don't have much signal there, which is true. Did you call the office or the secretary? Well, no. Try that next time. At one place I lived, if you went a little ways over the border, you'd be in Wisconsin, because I was kids pastor in Minnesota. I'd be like, oh, sorry, I was out of state that day. Technically true. I was out of state that day. I'm so sorry. But I had to plan ahead. It's not just going to happen. You have to make it happen. And then the hardest part for me was not answering. So if somebody emailed me or messaged me and was like, I'm so mad at you about blah, 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 don't answer. Oh, here's another thing my family life director taught me that was so brilliant. He said, if somebody's mad at you and they are like, we're going to talk about it this second, do not respond. Do not. Give them some time to calm down, number one. Two, do not meet with them at your house or their house. I know we are personal in our respect. Meet him at the church. I tried his method. I am kidding you not. It was amazing. It was amazing. You'd have people so mad on Friday. And then I'd always schedule them. I'm so sorry. I can't meet with you right now. Well, how about Wednesday at noon? This has to happen right now. I'm so sorry. I have a lot scheduled for this weekend. How about Wednesday at noon? By Wednesday at noon, 90% of the time, I got an apology. I'm so sorry. I was just really worked up that day. I had time to think about it. And I watched him do it, and it was the same when he did it too, time after time. And he said, if you go into it when emotions are high like that, it has more of a chance to blow up. And you're feeding their love of the drama. Because I wanted to make it all better right away. That's not a good idea. Some people also like it if they can get ministry leaders to jump and run. It's a control thing. And the you're a leader, so they like if they can get you to get upset like that. Don't do it. You got to schedule them out. Okay, you need to plan ahead. You're going to have to defend your boundaries. You'll need plans and backups to the backup plans. So I would say, okay, somebody got my number, and they called me, and I don't recognize, or I do recognize that number. I had changed my personal voicemail, too. Pastor Tricia is not available on Fridays. Here's the number you call. Okay, backup plans to the backup plans. Your leaders need fallow times, too. So I told you there are no built-in ones, so here's what we did. Summer, I gave all of my leaders the summer off. And I built, and it took time, it took work. I started around Christmas. I built a team for summer, a much smaller team. And we did a prepackaged curriculum, and we did a much smaller scale kids ministry all summer. Why? Because I knew we had VBS, we had Bible camp, we had the back to school rallies. These things we needed to work on, and my crew were exhausted. They just did 9 months with that many kids. So they were shocked when I had them together and I said, guess what? You got the summer off. Go camping with your family. Go pour into your family. Go be there with your spouse. We'll see you in the fall. Now, I did have a few. Usually my seniors who were committed to kids ministry were like over my dead body. And I was like, okay. So then I'd keep them for summer. Because they're phenomenal, but I'd say, I care about you and I don't want you to burn out. But I also would have some college kids that came in the summer, and we did a much more scaled down ministry. And I know at first this was like scary for the lead pastor. He's like, I was like, take a deep breath. This is going to be great. And then he realized, okay, this is working. Do you know how many of my leaders came back in the fall? All of them. Because they knew, I care about you. I care about your mental health. I care about your family more than what we're doing here. They all came back fired up and ready to go, and we recruited some more. So it's not going to scale itself down. You have to do it. So that's what we did. We scaled it down smaller. We made the summer so much lighter. That gave us time. We could catch our breath to plan the fall kickoffs. We started fall strong, and we gained a whole lot of families like that. You won't do it unless you give yourself time. So all of that also makes sense for vacations. So what that means is on vacation, you don't answer the calls. You don't read their Facebook messages. You hand it off to people, right? And don't apologize. Don't apologize. I hear kids leaders do this all the time. Oh, you know, I'm sorry, we're going on family vacation next week, but if you really need me, no. No. So be less accessible. Plan your day off and defend it. Express your boundaries without apology. Make sure you take every last vacation day, every single one. Can I also say, too, to plan in your schedule a day off or two right after each of your big events? I had a friend of mine tell me to do this. It changed everything for me. Because we tend to jump in the day after an enormous VBS and start doing, you know, all the cleanup and put away and all of that, and you're just running yourself ragged. You need a day or two to breathe. And nobody's going to just hand that. You're going to have to fight for it. All right? Less accessible. Strong boundaries, defend your boundaries, believe it's possible, and make it happen. We want to keep you in ministry for the long haul, don't we? We want them to stay, please. We want you to stay in ministry. The kids need you, so we need you to be as healthy as you can. All right? Go get your fallow season.